Hi, this is 15 Minutes with Mark Wade. You're here with Mark Wade, Editor-in-Chief of Boom Studios, and I'm here with...
Daphna.
And Ian Brill.
My indentured servants. And we are here today to talk, in part, about what we call Dados around the office.
Well, yeah, an acronym for Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep. A book we are not adapting it. We don't really have the terminology for it. I mean, it's a graphic translation.
Yeah,
it's the closest thing I can think of.
Skinning it.
Yeah.
Like a desktop theme.
That's actually that's good. We're skinning it. Exactly. It's the illustrated novel.
Yeah, I mean it's the entire text.
Yeah.
It's augmented reality literature.
One of the greatest science fiction writers of all time, Philip K. Dick.
Yeah.
How did we come across this property?
That was before I got here. It was the Electric Shepherd Productions, which is Philip K. Dick's two daughters run it. It's their company, basically, for his properties, for his novels.
Right.
Came to Boom, came to Ross and Andy, and wanted to do this. You know, they thankfully thought we were the company to do it right. So, I remember Ross saying he was reading the book going to Emerald City in 2008. So, might have been around.
It's about that time. The early part of 2008 is when they came to us. Because I remember this now, and we were talking about how do we do this? How do we take? There's no point in cutting the text to the bone because it's a great novel, and I don't want to be the guy who edited Philip K. Dick.
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah.
No, that's like editing the Bible. You can't. I don't know where to start. He's a great writer. He's a much better writer than anybody I will ever know, including the people I see in the mirror. So it's you go with what you got. And so who do we get to illustrate?
Oh, we got Tony Parker, and it was quite a search for artists. But eventually we settled on Tony, who I'd worked with in the Warhammer stuff. But I found with Tony that, like, he's definitely an artist that talks about who... thinks about story and thinks about the environment. We're talking about...
You mean the environment of the story?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Recycling. So.
Well, I'm sure he
maybe
thinks
he does,
about that
exactly.
As well. Okay. We were talking about Dean's work on Poe and how he went through the trouble of looking up the fashion of the time and stuff like that. It's kind of a fact that that's almost a rarity in comic artists where... you'll find a guy who cares about what's going on outside of the page. It's not just going to take whatever's in the panel description and just give you a bare bones adaptation of that script. I mean, he's really going to think about that world, and that was the big part of Dados.
You know, whether it's Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, or whether it's Irredeemable, or whether it's Poe, or anything like that, the starting point is always sitting down with the artist and getting them to create sketches of the characters, getting them to have some sense of what they look like, some sense of what that world looks like. And the smarter artists and the guys who are really good are the guys, like you say, think about the world outside what they're going to illustrate. The guys who I've enjoyed working with the most as artists over the years are the guys who can tell you what the cars look like, and what the street lights look like, and what the light switches look like in their even if you never actually see that on the page.
Exactly.
And it's important because it helps give a verisimilitude to the whole world. It's also important just on a craft level because your artist has to invent these characters, and just as you can't pick up a guitar and know it instantly, even if you know some songs on the guitar, you don't know all the songs. You've got to learn everything anew. Boy, that was a labored analogy. You've got to have an artist who can't be familiar enough with these kids. Honestly, one of the hardest things... All right, let me back up. Just as... And I know this from my years of being bullied on the playground. Just as the hardest thing to do in professional sports is what? Do you know?
You're asking me about sports.
I'm asking you. Do you know what the hardest thing in professional sports to do is?
Catch a ball? I
No. Ian?
Doing those Gatorade ads.
No,
Gatorade
it is ads. It is the hardest thing. Consistently, what I'm told over and over again is the hardest thing in professional sports to do is to hit a baseball.
I hit a baseball.
I straight. Not against Catfish Hunter, you didn't. So, first off, and secondly, no.
Ian, stop derailing the conversation.
Also, can I please have a show of hands of everybody who actually has believed Ian has ever actually hit a baseball?
Wait a minute, what are you talking about?
Anyway, so.
I think your prescription's worse than mine, Ian.
Anyway, my point being that just as that is, that one thing is the hardest thing to do. One of the hardest things to do, if not the hardest thing to do as a comic book artist, is to draw the same character over and over again, consistently on model. I'm not talking about Batman where he's got the mask and the ears. Yeah. I'm not talking about, you know, I'm talking more about the characters you create, you design, the yeah. characters who don't have the goofy suits to make them stand out, the guys who you have to rely just on their facial expression. You know, yeah. you have to be able to look at that person immediately and know that's Peter Parker, or that's Bruce Wayne, or in the case of Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, you've got to have a guy who can design Decker and design yeah. the ancillary characters.
Yeah.
And one of the smartest exercises I've seen is a grid on which an artist has, say, like 24 open slots, and his yeah. challenge is to all of them have an emotion under them.
Yeah.
Anger, rage, you know, surprise, amazement, whatever. It's now I'm being redundant, but you get my point. You know, flabbergasted, you know, weepy. And, the, you know, before he starts anything, the artist, you know, was smart to go through and do a head sketch of all of those emotions with that character just as a warm-up exercise, as a way of sort of getting a sense of, okay, this is what this guy's going to look like. And that's an important tool. So, I like the fact that Tony clearly world-built for us and has a sense of what that world looks like.
Well, and it's what's really nice about Tony's work is there's an aesthetic that's a through line throughout the book. It feels like this is a culture that's not our own,
yeah.
but that is created in whole cloth.
Right.
Like it feels like you're looking at, you know, through a window, but there's something just outside of what you're looking at.
Right.
And he has to do that a lot because he's illustrating so many aspects of this world that might not be directly related to the action, and it just comes off. That and the colors by Blonde.
I also have to give a shout out to Blonde. I mean, Blonde and Tony together make it really make it its own thing. I don't really think this looks like any other book out there on the stands, mostly for that. I mean, you don't get this kind of hard sci-fi. It's a pretty rare thing, and I think we're getting a really good package for it.
And this is going on for, we've got, how do we break, we're doing the whole novel, so how are we breaking this up?
20-some.
Like a 24-issue graphic novel.
20-something, yeah.
So, and it comes out July 15th.
Yeah, the first one.
And monthly after that. All right, so who are we doing for cover artists?
So the first issue, we have an A cover by Dennis Calero.
Yeah.
B by Bill Sienkiewicz. C by Scott Keating.
Mm-hmm.
And then the incentive by Mortot. And then we switch it up for 2 through 4, where it's Bill Sienkiewicz on A, Mortot, B, Scott Keating on retailer variants that you'll get through Collector's Paradise or probably through our website. And then it's Mortat A, Brett Wildealy B, and Scott Keating retailer incentives. And that should be it for the rest of the series, unless...
You're not telling them the most interesting thing about these, like, A, prestige format.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
gorgeous,
true.
We have significant spines.
We have spines.
Takes
that's
you
our,
longer than 5 minutes
at
to read
boom,
this
we
thing.
We have spines. Boy,
takes
that is
a, much longer.
It, holds
look,
it right
you
now,
have to
that's
understand,
a,
people in the comic industry, including myself, are very, very weak.
And also,
and
still selling it for $3.99. We're not raising the price.
No, we are not.
Are you kidding me?
And
no,
you,
yeah.
You're
still, no,
not
it's
still mentioning,
$3.99.
You're still not mentioning the cool part about it.
Well,
this.
I got to save the best for last.
Okay, yeah. Well, it's last. Go.
All right. We've got Back Matter by Comics Best and Brightest in the first 4 issue. Warren Ellis, number 1. Matt Fraction for number 2, Ed Brubaker number 3, and Rodney S. O'Bannon number 4.
Awesome. All of them Philip K. Dick fans.
Yeah.
Philip K. Dick fans and science fiction, you know, creators. And
yeah, no, and getting those essays has been a real, I've been enjoying the process, but getting those essays have been real high points.
I also would point out that we've been talking about this for 11 minutes, and it never once occurred to me that we've been talking about it as Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, but we've never said the B word.
No, Blade Runner. Blade Runner is awesome, but it when going to this property more and more,
right?
You do find the differences, and you do find what we're doing looks a lot different from Blade Runner.
Right. I'm just saying we haven't actually said concretely for the 6 guys who still don't know that.
Oh yeah,
Blade Runner is the film adaptation of Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, but being a film adaptation. like we talked about, it's you're editing, you're changing things, you're doing it to make a better movie and not necessarily a novel, whereas we're illustrating the novel. So it's a completely different experience, I would think.
You know, this ties back to a previous podcast,
yes,
right? The adapting across mediums.
Yes.
So this is a unique case in that we're not cutting, we're not expanding anything to fit. We're not fitting it into a template. We're actually adding more.
Right.
So does that, do you think that's going to change the experience? I mean, obviously it's going to change the experience of reading the book, but do you think it's going to shade the message, having another voice speaking at the same time, basically?
I hope so, because otherwise then it was a pointless exercise.
Yeah.
Because what we need to do is we need to make sure that we need to make sure that the artwork adds a dimension that takes you beyond the text, or else, you know, it may as well just be a big little book where all you read is the stuff on the left and you're not even paying attention to the books, the store pictures on the right, and you're looking at me like you have no idea what I'm talking about.
No,
you've never seen the Big Little Books?
No.
It's okay.
Is it? What are Big Little Books? Please.
First of all, they're huge. They're the size of billboards.
They are exact. For the Big Little Books are.
But the writing is really small.
They're like the size of a submarine sandwich. They're these old books that they're like, what, 3 inches square or something like that?
Are they with the gold spines?
You know what they look like? They're exactly the size of Eskimo Pie ice cream sandwiches, though, you know?
You have no idea what we're talking about.
Do you think I had Eskimo Pie sandwiches as a kid? Or Big Little Books?
Why not? You haven't been to a 7-Eleven?
Your parents kept her in a Skinner box until she was 18.
And all I had to eat was Eskimo Pie sandwiches.
I have nothing to compare it to.
Do you know what chocolate is? Do you know what Eskimo is?
Do you know what joy is?
Yeah.
Have you ever experienced it?
No. All right. So let me explain what a Big Little Book is. So in the late 1920s, early 1930s. One of the publishers came out with these. Essentially, they were a precursor to young adult novels, mm-hmm. if you will. They were specifically targeted to kids and teenagers, and what they were giant, thick, square books about 2.5 inches on the side, 3 inches on the side, that were like fat, like 300-400 pages of pulpy paper. And on the left would be all the text, and on the right-hand side, there would be an illustration on every single right-hand page. So, with a little tiny caption on it, kind of, so it's for the, you know, if you feel like reading the whole text, you can read the stuff on the left.
Oh, I think I read the Little Woman version of that.
There you go. But if you just want to flip through the pictures on the right-hand side and just read the little captions, you can get the sort of, you know, Cliff Notes abbreviated version of Moby Dick or whatever. Actually, they weren't classics. I'm sure there were probably were some classics, but by and large, they were like, here's a Tarzan story, or here's a, you know, G-Man story, or here's, you know, Buck Rogers or Tom Mix. Tom Mix, you also know. I just love. You have no idea who Tom Mix is. That's fine. That's fine.
You want to tell me about it for 2 minutes?
was Champion?
I've heard of Tom Mix, but I haven't actually read any Tom Mix. He's from the Old West, right?
He's a Western hero. Yeah. He was of that Gene Autry had Champion. Tom Mix had. Oh my God! Where to the web? I please write in on the boards, man, the message boards, and tell us what Tom Mix's horse's name was, like we're not going to look it up the moment we get off the podcast. So this is exactly what I'm talking about, by the way. You ping-pong from, we started talking about Philip K. Dick, and now we're talking about Tom Mix, and I don't know how we got
the
here.
Internet in 15 minutes.
Exactly.
Digestible format.
There you go. Speaking of 15 minutes, I believe our 15 minutes
is
up.
Yeah.
All right.
For another 30 seconds. I make it
sound like a jail sentence at this point.
We're going to start adding musical breaks to the podcast.
I know. And now, to the musical stylings of Raymond Raquello and his orchestra. That does it for this time. We will be back next week. Thanks for joining us. I'm Mark Wade.
I'm Daphna.
I'm Ian Burrell.
And we will see you next time.